Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Nice to be back with you during regular programming time. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Here we are, and Dr. Bernard Starr did help me a great deal today to do this program. Because what we were looking at is we were looking at the idea of, why people, what is this natural part of people? Imagine this, my friends. Imagine if we had for you, we had a way of getting you to take an herb of some kind. And if you take this herb, you would be feeling that you have more control over everything around you. And that if you took this herb and you took it every day, you would feel that people paid you attention because you were more attractive to them. You would feel like you had your choice of mates, not just one mate, but five or six in case anything went wrong. Imagine this. Imagine if you had a control over time. And you could have a control over the time around you, of where you spend your time. And when you spend your time, you don't have to go to work. Imagine if you could have this just by taking this one nice herb. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Well, you certainly would feel good. And that herb could be called money. You know, you could think about that. That could be called, if you had money, you would have all these things. If you had money, you would have more control. You'd have more power. You'd get more attention from people. You'd have more choices. You'd have more mates. And you'd have more control over your time. But now that it's money and not an herb, it doesn't sound so good. But we look, and we look through nature, and we say, well, are there other people in the world who want to have more than might be necessary to survive? Well, they call that word greed. The word greed means you want more than is necessary. Well, if you want more time than is necessary and more mates than is necessary, then that means that you must fall into that word of greed. Now, the word greed is being bandied around quite a bit nowadays because of the Bernie Madoff scandal. And just because your name is Bernie doesn't mean you're greedy. Bernie, sitting here with me. So, Bernie, here, it's just since we're doing this, let's try this way. Say hello.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, glad to be here with Armand, even when I'm off mic.
Well, you're mic. So tell them what you did with this.
Well, we're talking about greed, and some of these questions came up the other day when I saw this article in the Times by famous Tom Friedman, which he said, oh, it's the end of bubbles now, you know, now that we've had this great bubble of the financial world collapse and all the scams that they were doing, and we had an earlier one. But that's like saying it's the end of greed. And as Armand is indicating, there's something very fundamental, almost narcotic about greed, as if we had taken an herb. I mean, even to the extent that corporate America, which always had the mantra of keep the government out of it, keep the government out of it, and they were against and very harsh with people who were on welfare, and now they're getting it all. We've thrown billions at them, and they want us to throw more. It's and they're not aware of it, kind of, that they're asking for more, even from the government. You know, Armand, there's an old joke about that, and it it goes, how many conservative economists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer to that is none. If the government would leave it alone, it would screw itself in. Okay, but, you know, and that's what they're switching now because of this greed factor, which is a narcotic like the herb you're talking about.
And as we get to it, if you think about it in all of nature, there seem to be two kinds of ways that the animals have survived. There were the animals who just satisfied their immediate needs, right? I want to mate now. I want to have food now. I want to eat when I'm hungry. And then there are the ones who are hoarders and different animals who said, you know, if I'm going to survive, I'm going to take some food and I'm going to have to put it away. some maybe keep it up in the tree until I need it later, or I'm even going to eat something that when I'm not hungry and digest it at a later time, like snakes do. You know, I'll have it in my belly and digest it when I feel like it. So, I mean, hoarding is like one of the phenomenal ways that nature has decided that those who may not have food always available survive. So is it that the people who get really greedy are hoarders because on some level they believe they're not going to survive? We're going to get to that. We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about that with you here on WBAI. I want to talk to you, the audience. And I do want to remind you, in case I forget to tell you, I want to remind me to tell you that on Christmas Day, I'm living one of my great fantasies. I'm playing music all during my the program that would normally be scheduled, which is our program, The Positive Mind. I have pre-recorded a program, which I've sent out at WBAI, and they will have it there so that at 1 o'clock it will go on, and it will be mostly some of the greatest music I have ever heard that I decided to put together for you, and it's not Christmas music. So if you want an hour of really bopping, amazing music, be sure to tune in at 1 o'clock tomorrow on Thursday. So let me go back to this for a minute now. Talking about the people who seem to want more than they seem necessary to have. You know, you got a billion, you got to have 2 billion. Bernie was telling me a story about the guy who sold YouTube. And when he sold YouTube for the $1.something billion that he got for it, the people who earlier sold other dot-coms for millions of dollars said, oh, I should have held out and waited and sold for more money. There's this part of us that seems to make us believe that we have to either have it now, we have to beat the people around us. Okay. So maybe the idea of greed is to be able to survive among your peers. It certainly seems it when you think about the people who have these houses where they have to have bigger and bigger houses and more showy cars, that some part of them is saying that they have to have a they have to have more than is apparent at any given moment. So I wonder what that is. Oh, here it is. Armand DeMille here. Just one of these magical days today with all kinds of things happening right here at the studio. Who is that? You know, just one of my days. And it's all right. You know, we're going to take your calls today. 212-209-2900. Go ask Lydia if there's something happening there. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you. I want to know how you feel about it, because here are some questions I have for you. I have questions for you about your own potential for greed. I would imagine that we become the most judgmental about greedy people when we have it in ourselves. Is there some part of you that feels really judgmental about your own greediness, your own desire to have more than everybody else? I mean, where is this greed? Let's talk about this. Let's think about, you want health. Health is a good thing to want, isn't it? Health is a wonderful thing to have. You want health, but then somebody says, well, I got to go to the gym and I got to work out every day. Why do you got to work out every day? Because I want maximal health. I want the best health. I want more health than everybody else. No, not that, huh? Or how about you want love? And you ask the question, I want an absolute love. I want a love that has no conflict. I want a love that's going to be a devotion. How about children? I want to have children. I want to have more children. I want to have grandchildren. What is the idea? What's the idea behind us? Is this, do we call this greed and gluttony, or do we just say it's desirous? Do we separate ourselves from the other people in some way? I have 212-209-2900. 800-800-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to, hey, you know, we're going to take a call in just a minute. Before I do, my friends, I must attend to one engineering thing. Stay with me, would you please? Just stay with me. And then we're going to take your calls. Here's a little something for you. Welcome.
Okay, am I live
yes,
now?
Yes, you're here now. That's fantastic.
Great.
It was on my board. You know, we were trying to record a program for tomorrow, and the program we got tomorrow was so excellent, so perfect, so beautiful, but it required a whole bunch of rewiring, and I messed it up.
It happens.
Hey, my friends, on your charitable day in Christmas, here we are. We're talking about greed, and we're talking about greed, and we're talking about personal greed. So what is it about you, my friends? What is it about you that lusts for more? You know, you want more. Bernie and I are going to talk about what we think is the human condition at some point. Let it be said that there are some people who would be satisfied if they had enough, but they're very few. Almost everybody I know wants more. Everybody I know, if you're an artist and you say, all I want to do is paint my art and do my art, you have a wonderful thing, and then you say, but I want to sell a painting. And then I want to sell it for $1,000. And then I want to sell two paintings, and I want to have my own exhibit. Now, does that make you, the artist, less greedy than the guy who says, I want to get the institutions to invest in my mutual fund? What's the difference? Well, you say, well, I don't exploit anybody. But maybe you live off unemployment. You know, maybe that's your form of exploitation. Maybe you have Medicaid that you found somewhere. Or maybe it's food stamps. And all of that which comes at somebody else's cost. So maybe on some level we all have this thing inside us that wants to cut corners or to get the best of everything so that we can have the very best. And we wonder what that is. And Bernie and I will talk about that a little later. But I do want to grab some of your calls. And I know we have a couple of people online right now. And do me a favor. If you get on here, talk about yourself. Don't preach about the nature of greed. Okay? Because we've got enough pundits doing that. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Mr. DeMille.
Hi there.
How you doing? And hello, Bernie. Okay. Greed, you know.
Are you greedy? What's your name?
My name's John.
Don?
Yeah.
Don.
Greedy, I would say no, but it's like, what if I've never had it? And, like, I want that feeling. Like, I want to, like, I don't just want the self-appraisal thing. I just want, like, I guess I'm looking for some external. I don't know. I'm at a blank at this point. But it's you know, it's like if I've never had a sense of direction, and
okay, let me get that. And I do understand that there are a lot of people who feel aimless, and they want aimless, okay. Like without aim. They don't have a sense of direction, and they say, you know, I want to lust for something. I want to really feel it. Now, let me ask you something. Have you ever lusted for a mate, a person? Have you ever?
Yes,
you felt it then, right?
Yeah.
What was that like? Did it make you feel alive?
Yeah. It's like I know what I wanted, but it's like when I look at her, I guess I could see what I'm doing wrong, or it's like I see like I'm not where I should be.
Okay,
or like I'm just going about a lot of things the wrong way.
So, John, there's one of the disadvantages of having a goal is it makes you challenge yourself to see what it is about yourself that falls short.
Huh.
You know, so it's kind of smart not to have goals. I know a lot of people who don't have any goals. They just live day to day, and they never have to challenge themselves.
But isn't goals part of your sense of self or like self-consciousness?
It could be or it could not be. And I'm going to go right there right now because that's our punchline. So, Bernie, let's take that on. Bernie's going to talk about the ego and the sense of self as it relates to greed.
Yes. Well, let's first be clear that we're not knocking even lust and certainly not desire, that these are important parts of our being in a body, being a human being, living in the world. The question is, does that take control of you? Are you in control of it? Does it live you so it becomes out of control? And at the same time, can the me part of it step aside sometimes so that you're aware of the other person? You were talking about a relationship and being involved with somebody. So that's some of the complexity of it. But also, greed, if we want to call it that, is to a degree part of the human condition, isn't it? It's part of our ego. We're born in need, we're bred in need, and some of us ultimately become consumed in need. And that's
could that be said the same for like drinking or something? Like if you like you're in a bar and then you know friends come in and you're just about to leave it and you just start going with more drinks. You just don't want to put it down. Would that be like you know like?
Well, that's clearly, yes, well, that's out of control then. You're not in charge there. And that's not good for you, and you're going to get into trouble with that. Okay, so something has to enter in there to modulate that so that you are in charge, that you're not being lived by that that craving or that herb that that Armand talked about before, that you have to control that herb. Okay, now you might also think of, we're talking about the ego and that, can sound like a cliche, and you could talk about higher consciousness, and that could sound like a cliche. But there's something very real about that. And maybe I could draw the picture here to clarify that of think of it as an operating system. Okay. You know, like, let's say at one time our computers were run by DOS, and you could do very few things with it. But there's another system there, okay, of a higher consciousness. That does not have this kind of craving, and fortunately, it's part of the original factory-installed equipment. It's part of all of us, and that's a very
discussion. Yeah, but why would you want to put yourself in control? Why would you want to be in control? Aren't you? You know, it feels like so good to be out of control and to explore.
For you, it does. Certainly it does. So what I hear you saying is you've spent a life of frustration where you didn't have any passions and desires and that you're basically depressed. And what you use is you use energy, the energy of desire, the energy of being involved keeps you out of your depression. Of course you do. Of course you want that. That's most of the people who I've ever seen who are sitting around a bar. They've
WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
Yeah, of course. And that's what happens after a while. You know what happens after a while? The spark doesn't work anymore. The spark becomes a sputter. And you say, oh, I've done this spark before. I'm getting tired of it. But now let me say something to you about being pissed off at yourself, right? Instead of being angry at yourself for having done it, just say, I've used up that spark. That spark isn't going to work because it's like people with greed, you know? It's like I've known people who have worked in the financial world, and they always won, and they won, and they made lots of money and lots of money, and they finally said, but what good is this?
Isn't that doing anything? Thank you for taking my call, Mr. DeMille.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, John. 212-209-2900. He had to go suddenly. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Armand.
Yes.
Pleasure to be speaking with you. Hello, Bernie. Happy holidays to both of you.
Good.
Armand, I'd like to share just a little perspective of greed and how it's affected me. And the fact that I once had greed in what I considered to be a positive greed, that I wanted more money, more stability for my family. And I extended myself at every cost to obtain that for them. And all I've realized in all this time is that the money, you may or may not get it. You may lose more than you win. But the real loss here at all of this was the time that you could have spent with your family, the person you have become.
Okay, wait. What's your name?
This is Matt.
Matt, instead of the you, make it I. Okay, personalize it, because you're talking about yourself.
Is I.
What?
It definitely is I.
So I, the money I spent, the time I spent making money, the time I spent abandoned for my family. Go ahead. Because people hear when you talk about I.
Yes.
People never hear when you talk about you.
The sacrifices that I made to try to obtain those goals was my family. That was the sacrifice. The time that I lost, the time that I won't get back, the person that I am today is not the person that I had foreseen myself being, trying to obtain those goals. And the goal was financial stability.
All right, let's go back there for a minute, Matt. So at the time, you're married and you had a child, right?
Four.
You had four children, right? Four is a lot of abundance.
Yes.
You have four kids, and you probably would have gone out of your mind had you stayed home. There was no part of you that really wanted to get caught up in this. You decided, you chose overwork as your way of escaping the kind of mess that was created with you and four children and a wife.
Right.
So it was not a matter of you worked instead of loving your children. You just couldn't stand being there, but you couldn't admit it.
I wouldn't even say that, Armand. I couldn't stand myself.
Okay, that's what I mean.
Not having the financial stability to say, yes, I will take time. Yes, I will take a vacation. Yes, I will be a soccer coach or a baseball coach.
Okay, but I'm proposing something different to you, Matt. I'm proposing this. That's one way of seeing it. So this way you go around perpetually guilty, saying, oh, well, how did I not do it? And I'm saying, no, you were too young. You were unprepared. You didn't know how to love. And so what you did instead was you shifted your attention to something that looked like a formula that might work as a substitute for love, and you saw that it didn't work. But it makes all the sense in the world. A young man with a wife and four children, it's overwhelming to think that you would have tried to tackle that. Instead, you went to lining up the ducks and seeing if you could make that all work, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I thought was, the day that we had more money would be the day that we would have more time. Right, but you look at all the time that you've lost.
So did I ever tell you, I haven't told the story in a long time, I'm going to tell it about Ido. Ido is a man from Israel who comes to see me, and he comes to me at the Demel Center where I work, and he says, I'd like a job doing something. And I said, well, what would you do? He said, well, I'll wash your windows. He says, all I need is $15 an hour. I said, $15 an hour? I said, it's a lot of money for washing windows. He said, well, I'll take 10. I'll just take anything. I said, well, you know, if you get working papers, you could work here. You know, it's fine. So he went on, but he went on to do people's windows at $10 an hour and $15 an hour. And I saw him. I said, so why do you want the money? And Ido said, I want to buy a little boat and float around the Caribbean. That's all I want, a little boat. So then I saw him a year later, and there was Ido still hiring himself out. And I said, Ido, what are you still doing here? And he said, I need a bigger boat. And that was my lesson. We always feel like we need a bigger boat.
And my point today, Harmon, is that forget the bigger boat. Take the less money, spend more time with what really matters, and that's your family, and that's your kids,
that's
and your loved
family.
Ones.
We should all spend, it is back to the eye.
Yeah, absolutely. I have now had the epiphany that I will no longer sacrifice my family for work. It will be the exact opposite. Because at the end of the day, it took me 8 years to realize it, but this is what is most important to me, that it wasn't more money, it wasn't the stature, it wasn't the job, it was the people I loved, my family, my children, my wife. You know, this has been my greatest support. This is what has kept me alive, not the money. You know, this is what has meant most to me.
Matt, it sounds to me like you made a move for yourself, you know?
And I can't wait for the day where I can make less money and not be a slave to the long weeks.
Sure. Thanks for calling in.
Have a happy holiday.
Thank you. It is 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM. Let me give you a little bit of music of simplicity. Today, I want to bring you something that I would love you to have, and it's just a taste of what happens tomorrow. Isn't that sweet? George Lewis from Jazz at Preservation Hall. Much more of that tomorrow, my friends, at 1 o'clock here at WBAI. Be sure to tune in. And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind with Dr. Bernie Starr. We are looking at greed and easy it is to judge greed when we see it in other people. And how not to recognize it in ourselves when we see it. And how hard it is to face the fact that, you know, the whole bunch of us would like to be in the positions that many of these people, not me, I've had my choices in my life. But, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing, greed. I want to tell you something about the psychopath. I'm going to call it the psychopath. A psychopath, when you think about it, is the public mind, is a loathsome, fascinating figure imagined as a berserk, you know, serial killer, the crazy psychopath. But, you know, actually, the psychopath is a kind of person who has no loyalty, virtually no emotion, and no conscience. So when you look at people on the screen, people on TV who have been humiliated or got caught or got busted for something or other, there's an apparent no emotion, no consciousness, and they are promiscuous in friendships. They start instantly and leave an alliance instantly if it creates an advantage. Their specialty is stirring and steering feelings in others without being touched themselves. And this kind of business person is one kind of feelingless business person. They just move people around. Now, that very person could be a presidential candidate that you admire. For all you know, any one of them up there, anybody up there, it could have been the guy who was, you know, voting for a better environment, or it could have been your favorite, or it could have been any Democratic politician, or it could have been anyone. They could all be psychopaths. You have no way of knowing just because they show sincere emotion. You can be practiced at sincere emotion. If they know how to move people around, and that's what politicians do, they know how to move people around, that's what their specialty is. If we need to invest in them, our hearts and our minds, and we need to believe at such a point that we say, you are going to save me, then we become the very same kind of greedy person. We're now putting the feeling about ourselves outside of ourselves. Now, this is where Bernie's book on the ego is very important, because he talks about a concept of self. Bernie, if you could try it simply, you know, the concept of self, why a person has a sense of self that they get, that it's just not enough. What is it? Why do we go for this more?
Well, let's go back to that image we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the person clinging to a ledge, okay? The person hanging on for dear life onto a ledge. And his whole focus, his whole existence is centered on that, okay? That nothing else is of concern because it's a life and death issue. If I let go, you know, I'm gone. And you or I come along and say, hey, look, you know, there's more to life than that. Let go, and you will find a much more expansive state of being, a ground of consciousness, a ground of being, a sense of wholeness. Okay, that's there. And you say, hey, come on, give me a break. You know, I'm involved in this life and death struggle.
Okay, now my question to you, Bernie, is where is the ego in this? Just where is the ego?
Well,
what is ego? Is ego a sense of self?
Ego is a sense of self, but it's a very narrow me self. And where does that come from? Okay, we have to understand where it comes from. When we're all born into a situation of need, it's part of the human condition. The human being needs greater care than almost any other animal in the animal kingdom, okay, and our survival depends on that. So our total focus from the very beginning is on need, and behind that is the feeling that there's something missing, that there's a deficit there, that I need things, and as I get things, I start feeling better, okay? So that sense of me starts expanding, and then when we start thinking about things, we develop ideas and concepts of things that we project, that we think may satisfy us, may give us that sense of wholeness that will somehow help us in that clinging. Okay.
Can I ask the question?
And it never ends. It never ends.
Well, it doesn't necessarily ever end unless, if when you have a need, the need is truly satisfied as a child. If you have a need for nurturance and the need for nurturance is satisfied, then maybe you see there is a satisfactory point. If you see a need for friendship, or you feel a need for companionship and you feel that that is met, or if you have a sense of family and those needs are met, it may never become an undying quest. And I think what you're saying is very important, that for most people, they are never satisfied and gratified in their needs because whatever is delivered to them is usually not adequate. Not adequate enough to satisfy this very strong need.
Yes, because that sense of need is built on that feeling of a deficit, that there's something missing. So sure, as you get satisfied, there's a temporary relief. And isn't that what we observe all the time? That people strive for something, they may greedily strive for something, the bigger the better, because that's going to fill that hole. And then there's a brief period of quiescence. Ah, you know, I'm there. And then suddenly that gnawing sensation comes back, and we're marching again, you know, to the same beat, to the same tune. Okay. But the question is there another ground of being? Okay. And that's what I call omniconsciousness is about. Now, there's many words for that. There's many terms in different spiritual traditions, different psychologies, call it higher consciousness, et cetera, et cetera. And that's our original equipment. It's hard to get back to that because of the human condition and the experiences we have throughout life, especially in early life, of needing things, of striving for things, of clinging for things, and then getting that gratification, which reinforces it and says, ah, that's it, you know, that's the right thing. So that even if we fast forward to the billionaire who believes, oh, I'll fill that hole if I make another billion, and to us who live at a much different scale, think he's got it already, but in his mentality he doesn't. And the proof is, he gets the next billion, and it's still not enough. And then the whole thing starts unraveling.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, Dr. Bernie. And we have been here at WBAI for a while with you, talking about this idea, this concept of greed and needing and wanting a lot. And is there ever a point where you feel satisfied? Well, there is, you know, there's a certain level of satisfaction that you get. One of the advantages of age is I've seen so many older people, they settle down. What I got is good enough. What I got is good enough. I don't need more. And something about the wanderlust seems to be the thing that drives people to a certain point, and then a certain point where they say, that's enough. That's enough. Now, I don't know if that's mental health or if that's mental, you know, becoming a slowpoke. I don't know for sure. But either way, you know, there is a point when you get free of this craving and driving, and it feels great. It feels great when that's not motivating you. 212-209-2900. We've got to take some of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi there. Hi there. Thank you for waiting. Could you turn down your radio?
Hello?
Yes, you have to turn off your radio.
I got it off.
Thank you very much. And your name?
Okay, my name is Ronald Toro. Basically, I know you asked for an I instead of a U, but I just wanted to say that just like an addict, you're in love with the chase, not the, because the chase brings you alive and gives you purpose.
Wait a minute. We could do this. What did you say your name was?
My name is Ronald Toro. I have spoken to you
Ronald,
before.
Of course, and, yeah. Ronald.
All I wanted to basically...
Yeah, but wait, talk about yourself, too. You have been in the chase, right? You've been an addict.
And you know what that's like, right? Pardon?
You know what that's like. So when you talk from, instead of talking from the you, when you talk from the I, people hear a man with experience who's talking from his heart and his soul. So tell me about you and that chase that you were in.
This was many years ago, but since then, in looking at it, I realized that what's really behind it is the chase. It's not really the heroin that an addict or whatever pursuit is after, even gambling, it's that when the person is in the process, he's alive. And it could
thing,
be for different reasons that in everywhere else, his skill is non-existent. Or
right,
at least so, not too successful.
So
but
the very skill of even having to find a bag of heroin, to be able to find the best bag of heroin you could get for the certain amount of money. To
and brave the environment.
Yeah, and to do the whole thing, brave the environment, get the whole thing, shoot it up and do that whole thing. Even that itself makes you feel like you're doing something. It's a total world.
You're involved in something. You're
That's
really
right.
interested.
That's
you're
right.
concerned right. where everything else, you're just going along with the program because you're supposed to. I mean, I'm talking about depending on the individual, how,
sure.
you know, skillful, how success, how much intelligence,
well,
he's able to master.
How did you take control of it? How did you take control of it? What point did you take the control that says, no, I'm not going to do it, when you knew how good it was to do it?
But I'm just saying that same thing applies to people with their partners. Like you have a woman, how many people break up not right now? Because once the excitement is gone, the person is not engaged anymore. You know,
yeah.
for whatever reason. I'm not saying everybody is like that, but you know, and for the reason why I stopped, you basically grow out of it. You can't run down the block no more.
You can't come down the side of a building on a rope.
Right?
You grew out of it.
Yeah, that's the only
not
thing.
Everybody.
Not
everybody. I know a lot of people who don't. When you say the word you, you're talking for everybody, but you mean you grew out of it. I've
come to see that everybody is like that. If you don't grow out of it,
true.
It's only because they're making it easy for you to get money. You have a door. You have you have access to money. You know, when I say money, I mean enough money to get high.
Congratulations to you. For growing out of it, even though you don't take
I'm almost 70. I'll be 70 next year.
And you got out a lot sooner than a lot of people I know. They usually get out by dying. So.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot pursue addiction beyond, let's say, 40. Because just like on a job where you come late, the boss might remember when he messed up when he was a kid and then reprimand you and then smile to himself. When you get older, no one's interested. They'll fire you.
Yeah.
If
well,
you come
you.
Late.
Thank you very much.
So
thank you for
you know,
your wisdom and
change,
thank you. Thank you for being 70 years old and hanging in with us.
Well, I'm still hanging in there. There's no doubt.
Thank you.
Thanks a whole lot. I appreciate it. Have a great holiday, everybody.
212-20.
All right.
Yeah, 212.
Thanks again.
Sure. Bye bye.
Right.
You know, let me talk a minute about generalization. And there's a reason why when you hear people unable. Wait, we'll do that. When you hear people unable to talk in the I, and they always talk in the you, it's a safety net, you know? It's a way of feeling safe. When you say, I feel sad, or I felt sad when I lost my dog, you can almost hear the tears in my eyes. When I say, you feel sad when you lose your dog, you don't hear me anymore. It's almost like I disappeared and I'm now preaching over the lines. So generally my task with people is to ask people to speak for themselves. Because the rest of us appreciate it so much when you hear you talking you directly from your heart, the I experience. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
This is Rob out on Long Island.
Hello, Rob.
And there's only one thing in my life I could say that I'm actually greedy with. It's a little bit different. I do a lot of surfing. And we have a saying that there's no friends in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Because the minute you get out into the lineup, no matter how many waves you've caught before that...
Wait, we've been back to you. Hold on. I'm sorry.
No matter how many waves I've caught, when that next set comes through, even if I just caught the one before it, and there's three or four guys sitting around me, I want that next wave no matter
sure
what.
Sure you do.
It's sure a hard do. Thing for
and
people that don't surf
thing,
to understand.
It?
Yeah, there's nothing like it.
It's an amazing thing because it's something like, it's such a surge. Now, if we were to look at that really closely, what we would find, Rob, is that there's some chemistry that goes off inside of you. Something like dopamine gets triggered.
Right.
When you see a wave, and it balances you perfectly. and you feel in perfect balance when you're facing that wave, which is very different than when you're in a relationship with somebody who's telling you you don't know how to talk about your heart. You know what I mean? When you have a relationship with somebody, like, do you have somebody in your life who's a mate?
No, not right now.
Of course not. Because if only a mate could be like a wave, and you could meet them, and you could ride them, and you could be with them, and you could have peace with them, and then they're quiet afterwards. But you don't like that so much.
And then, the funny thing is also that when you're out there, no matter what else can be going on in your life, you're right there in the moment. Nothing else matters when you're on that wave.
And when you're in a relationship, what happens?
It's the same thing.
No, when you're in a relationship, it's never the moment. It's always about tomorrow and what did you do and how did you talk to me and
right.
The stuff that you hate, you know? The
yeah.
Stuff that you can't tolerate, which I could tell.
And then the only time when I've gotten enough waves is either when I'm too cold or I just can't lift my arms anymore.
So maybe that's when you should fall in love.
There you
maybe
go.
That's a time when you're too cold and you can't lift your arms, you should go and say, I'm ready to meet somebody. You know, but here's a question for you. Did you ever meet anybody who was a prospective mate who rode the waves with you?
I met one girl. Unfortunately, she didn't feel the same way. So
yeah. That would have been amazing, huh?
Yeah, that would have been something.
I saw the movie Surfwise. Did you see that movie?
No, I didn't.
And Surfwise kind of talks about a family who got really involved and the whole concept therein.
Right.
Kind of an interesting thing and how it works with relationships as well. Well,
right.
I tell you, Rob, thank you for calling so much.
Thank you.
I think many of us may go out and grab our surfboards and head for the water this weekend. Are you surfing this weekend? No, he's gone. I'll bet he is. I'll bet he is going to go and surf this weekend. Wouldn't that
probably
be
him? He probably left already.
Probably he's there calling us. 212-209-2900. Beautiful people we have here on BAI. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Could you turn down your radio all the way, please?
Oh, my radio is off.
Okay.
I think, based on my experience, I think we have to make a clear distinction between greed, need, desire, addiction, conditioning, value system, fear. When is it beyond fear? And I think a big part of what we're talking about is in the beginning you referred to a person on welfare or a person on unemployment. A person on welfare is not necessarily because of greed. It could be because of survival, and based upon the way the system is designed, the person knows that, hey, you know, I have to have an income coming from this place, that place. A person on welfare, for example, a black person who's aware and enlightened, might be deciding...
Wait, just a moment. What's your name?
Lincoln Brown.
Lincoln, okay, but before you go further, number one, I never even mentioned the word welfare. And
no, you did.
No, I didn't say welfare. But now let me just go with you for a minute. Mm-hmm. I talked about the person who is the artist who has an option of working or living off welfare, not even welfare, but living off things like Medicaid and unemployment, which is eventually paid for by the other people. And that's all I talked about. I didn't talk about it as a bad thing. Of course there are people who need support, number one. But number two, we're in the last 3 minutes, and I don't want to have an esoteric dialogue about the nature of greed. I'm trying to talk to people about what they feel inside themselves. You know, and I hear you're a man who's been through a great deal of things in your life, and you have had to sort through all these emotions. You've had to ask yourself, when am I greedy? When am I needy? What do I really need? And you've learned to identify what you feel when you feel it, and that's done good for you, hasn't it?
No, I would say I am a man who's a thinker, and I am constantly dissecting myself and others and
that.
The society.
Yeah, so then when you dissect yourself and you get down to your heart, mm-hmm. what happens when you dissect your the love that you have in your heart. Do you dissect that too, or do you let yourself just feel it?
Pardon?
Do you let yourself feel the love that you have in your heart, or do you dissect that also?
You feel it, but after you finish feeling it, it's just like a performance.
You're back to you now. You're back to you, I hear. You feel it.
Hello?
Yeah, you link and you feel this love, and then what happens after you feel it?
No, what I'm saying is it's like a performer. You go on the stage, and, you know, in the moment, you're living the moment. But after the show is over, you reflect on what happened.
I understand.
And you say, hey, such and such is the same way with a relationship or anything in life. And I think that's probably one of the problems with this world. We're not taught to stop and think and analyze and dissect. You know, it's always constantly in the emotion of things, which is good. But
thank you. I appreciate your thinking. I appreciate your heart. I have to get going now.
All right, cool.
So thank you so much. Thank you. So there you see it, my friends. You ask somebody to talk about themselves, and of course they have to talk about you and the you that happens and the you that happens. But listen, before we go, let me tell you something. I want to say thank you. Thanks. I mean, thanks a million times over for those people, those rare, precious, marvelous people who have learned about the secret place and they pitch their tents there. Those who dwell in the attitudes of hope and confidence. Those who reach across rather than down. Thanks. Thanks to those people whose presence always leaves us feeling a little better about ourselves. Thanks for all those loving people, those custodians of the secrets of love.
This is Phil Donahue.